our heroes. Back to our heroes. How does it go? We last left our heroes. We left off with three questions. We now know that Melech, who had a plan, he was aware of certain facts that were out there. He had a mission he wanted to perform, to start a malchus that would tamp down the shvot hashoftim problem with the way. And he knew somehow that he had to look in Moab for these girls who would somehow join with his family and begin this malchus. So we ended up with three questions. What element of malchus was in Moab? What element of malchus is in Moab? That's called question one. Question two, how did an aspect of malchus get to Moab? And number three, how was Elimelech going to find that girl who had that aspect of Malchus? Is there going to be a well or, you know, something like that? They seem to always find the girls by the well. Is there going to be a shidchameter? How is he going to find this girl? So we're going to take these questions one at a time. Each one has a development to it. I don't think I answered the first two questions. Critical midah of Malchus is Mesirus Nefesh. Malchus requires Mesirus Nefesh. A king has to go beyond the norm. Sometimes he's allowed to go beyond normative halacha. A king is allowed to kill a moreid without a basin. In fact, you're sure you'll recall, when I called your father in the beginning of the year, Yishev Rufu Shlema, to just say hello, Yishev's going to be in my shir, he asked me on the spot, the king has reshus to kill a moreid without a basin. Does he have a chiv to kill the moreid without the basin? Now, I don't know what sugis he was holding in, and I didn't tell him that I was even contemplating learning this. But that was the question he asked me when I said, hello, I'm Rabbi Melzer, your son's going to be in my shir. Oh, once I have you on the phone, is it reshus to kill the moreid or is it a chiv to kill the moreid? And I went running to the Rambam. I don't remember what I answered, actually. I don't remember the answer. Good question. Good question. Okay. A king has what's called in American law eminent domain. He really owns your property. You own it, but he really owns it. And therefore, the king can take away property as needed for his whims. A king can break fences to trespass because his army or simply his entourage. I can go from one place to another, and the fastest way is to your field. He can break the fences. Melech poreitz geder. Melech can break fences, break walls. He can trespass. He also is not supposed to listen to the people like Shaul did by the Maisa Amalek. He has to have a Mesirus Nefesh for Hashem's will, even if the people tell him otherwise. He's not a democratic leader who is representing the people. And therefore, he does not submit to their will. Melech is representative of HaKadosh Baruch on this earth. And sometimes it takes Mesirus Nefesh, but that's what he has to always do. He messed up by Maisa Amalek. The Midah of Malchus is Mesirus Nefesh. And this trait, as we'll see, and I don't think I said this before, this trait is in the genes of a Malchus lineage. David HaMelech was Mesirus Nefesh. Can anyone give me some examples of where David HaMelech, early in his career, was Mesirus Nefesh, even before he was Melech? That's an example.
didn't he save, like, an animal?
Sammy Gorman?
He went to fight Goliath.
He went to fight Goliath, yes. I overheard somebody else, maybe it was Lev Yaakov, say he fought a lion. True. He also had Mesiras Nefesh. When dealing with Shaul, many times he could have killed Shaul. He didn't kill Shaul. We dealt with him. That was a case where the Shver was very Shver. Shaul was his Shver, his father-in-law. And he was a very difficult person for David to deal with once Shaul wanted to kill him. His friendship with Yonatan, Yonasan, his best friend, very difficult when you know that your best friend's father literally wants you dead. That took Mesiras Nefesh. It was above and beyond the norm. But this gene of Malchus comes from earlier than David. Yehuda was Moser Nefesh. When was Yehuda Moser Nefesh? Any ideas, fellas? Yeah, Shimi?
When he admitted to the Veir with Tamar.
When it came to the Veir with Tamar, what was his Mesiras Nefesh? Doing the Avera? That he admitted to it. That he admitted to the Avera and said, Sadka Mimeni, publicly. To admit publicly a tshuva that no one else had ever done before, the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, Reuven had done a different chet privately and done tshuva privately. But Yehuda was the first to admit publicly, Tzadka Mimeni, I'm the father of Tamar's baby. He admitted publicly when he could have gotten away with it. She would have died, no one would know. But he admitted his guilt. That took Mesiras Nefesh. After that, there was Mesiras Nefesh too on the part of Yehuda. Yehuda said to his brothers, Lo sakenu nafesh, let's not kill Yosef. Put him in the bar, sell him to the Yishmaelim. Also took a Mesiras Nefesh to stand up against the rest of the brothers. And his most well-known Mesiras Nefesh versus Yosef. Vayigashe lov Yehuda to take on the viceroy of Egypt. Yehuda had tremendous Mesiras Nefesh, and therefore Yaakov in his bracha to Yehuda said, Lo Yasur Shevet Me Yehuda. Yehuda will always have the Shevet scepter of kingship, because he represents Mesiras Nefesh. In fact, that was the Havamina of the Chashmonoim. You know I like Havaminas. That was the Havamina of the Chashmonoim, that they should become kings. They were the ones who were Moser Nefesh to protect Klal Yisrael in that time. And therefore they felt they deserved the Malchus. They clearly represented, maybe it wasn't in their genes, but they represented that Midah of Malchus, the Midah of Mesiras Nefesh. Let's go back even further. There was a woman who was promised to have descendants Bate Malchus. Who was that woman? Please tell me. Is the woman Miriam, correct. When was Miriam Moser Nefesh? Rashi explains she risked her life to do what was right, as a Yare Elokim, says the Pasuk. She saved the babies that Paro said, you see them, kill them right away as they're being born. She said, no way, I'm not killing the Jewish babies. She was a Yare Elokim. That was scary. I mean, this is Melech Mitzrayim. At that point in time, the most powerful person perhaps in the world. So she was rewarded with Malchus. She had the Midah of Malchus, Mesiras Nefesh. So she was rewarded with the outcome of that Midah, Malchus. Midah Keneged Midah. She was, of course, married once again to who? Who was Miriam married to, remember?
Olive.
Kalev is Moser Nefesh when?
For the Meraglim.
The Meraglim. Yes. He went, Shah. And they thought he was going to say Lashon Hara about Moshe Rabbeinu. Then he said, the land is Tova Ma'od Ma'od. Against all the Meraglim. They're ready to kill him. In fact, their son Chur was Moser Nefesh by the Chida Egel, and he was killed. Interesting. Tried to protest the Chet Egel, he was killed. So this Midah of Malchus is an inherent part of their makeup. Again, it's in their genes. This is why I conjectured that it was Miriam and Kalev's daughter who ended up marrying Asher Ben Aminadab. By the way, he had Mitzvah's nephew, Asher Ben Aminadab. Right? Jumping into the one opinion of Rav Asher, the first one to jump into the sea. Wow. I didn't even mention that one ever before. I gotta write that one down. I got this. Nachshon jumps into Yamsi from Rambam's Basra. I forget where it is. Jumps into Yamsi. We conjecture that he was the one. Oh, we haven't stated that yet, have we? I think we did come up with that. Yeah, I remember. Did we say that already over here? Oh, we did. Yeah. Daughter married Nasha. Okay. Go to Tamar now. Tamar, we know, is the mother of Peretz. Tamar was the daughter of. Medrash Rabba tells us, Bracious Rabba. Tamar was the daughter of Shem ben Noach. I'm not going to go into Shem and Noach having Mitzvah's Nefesh in the table. It's obvious, but I don't know. But Tamar, what she does was completely with Shem Shemayim. Chased after Yehuda after she felt she was rejected, and she was Moshe Nefesh. She was willing to give up her own life to keep the halacha, not to be mivayesh, not to embarrass Yehuda. As the Gemara says, Mavun Chaver Barabin Kila Shofes Domin. If you embarrass somebody, it's like you killed them. She wouldn't embarrass Yehuda and say, "You're the father of the baby." She wouldn't do it. She was willing go into the Kibshon HaEsh to die rather than to embarrass Yehuda. That's a tremendous Mesiris Nefesh. The Medrash says further in the Yalkut Shimoni, Tamar Osek B'Yibum. She was interested in living with Yehuda so that Yehuda could perform Yibum. In those days, Yibum was not just with a brother, it could be with any, it could be with any close relative. V'Hashem Osek B'Oro Shel Mashiach. The Kodesh Baruch Hu was guiding all this so that the light of Mashiach would come through that union of Yehuda and Tamar, says the Ramban repeatedly, that Tamar was a tzaddikas. Possibly both years. Ellie. Chaviva, can you take Kelly upstairs? Mommy's working. Ellie, we can't have noise now. Mommy and I are working. Ramban says repeatedly, that Toma was a tzaddikas. In those days, Yibum was to any close relative, and that's what she was trying to do. Furthermore, the Gemara says in Sota Daf Yud, Tamar was a tznua in the household. She was married to Aaron Onan. She was a tznua. That's why we find that Yehuda was lo yoda ki kaloso. He did not know that Tamar was his daughter-in-law. How did he not recognize her as a Zona? He should have been able to recognize her, see her face. He may have. But when she was living by them, apparently, she refused to cover her face. We'll get back to that point a little bit later. She was a tznua. Sakanim, based on the Medrash, says Yehuda was vayetz. A malach pushed Yehuda to the Talmud. Says that in the Medrash, why the malach push you to the Talmud? When did that Sakanim Yehuda pass her by? He kept walking. He did not want to stay with her. But because said that came because of Tom's mysterious nefesh, nations of Tznius, the Malach pushed Yehuda back and pushed him onto her. Because of that mysterious nefesh, she was Zocha to Malchus through Peretz, her son who burst forth. Peretz, the whole Midas, the most nefesh, even beat out his brother into the world. It was in his genes, it wasn't even a choice. In the genes, he jumped out before Zerach, his brother. Melech Koritz Gedder is the essence of Malchus, the defining characteristic of royalty. So all these people embodied the Midah of Mesiras Nefesh, which was manifested in their lives. That answers the first question. So what Midah, what elements of Malchus, I'm sorry, was in Moab? The Midah of Mesiras Nefesh. That's the Midah of Malchus we're looking for. Second question was, how did an aspect of Malchus get into Moab? Here we go. How did this aspect of Malchus, Mesiras Nefesh, get into Moab? The Midah that Elimelech was looking for, that he had a Mesorah, he knew had to be in Moab. Moab of Akamel on the Ches, Hashem had told Moshe Rabbeinu, you can't destroy Moab because they're going to be the two Prizos, two birds, one of them is Rus. He knew it was in Moab. How did it get to Moab? How did this mean to get to Moab? Let's go back to the story of Lot. Lot and his daughters escaped from Sodom. Lot was a Talmid of Avraham Avinu. Lot was a Talmid of Avraham Avinu. But he didn't fully understand all of his Rebbe's teachings. He left, so to speak, before the shir was over. He was in yeshiva for a few short years, but not long enough. Before the person goes out to the Marbit Torah himself, he has to be complete. He has to have had years and years and years in yeshiva to try to be Marbit Torah without fully getting his Rebbe was a mistake. There has to be a complete lilmod. Before there's a lalamid, I'll tell you, this is something just getting a little off track that I was personally very scared about when I started teaching. Because being all of 24 years old, I started when I was 25, but finished Micha 24 years old, after having spent 3 years taking psychology courses in graduate school, which meant I missed half of two afternoon seders and half of two night seders a week. Besides whatever work I had to do, plus 4 years in college. I was in college for a total of 5 years. I didn't finish high school, so I had 2 years of college, and then 1 year I went to Eretz Yisrael, and then 2 more years of college. So while those 4 years I was actually in college, I took 12, 15 credits a semester. A full course load is 16. Some people take 17 and a half, the maximum I think they allow in YU. But I did either 12 or 13. I always did shir, 3 credits. And I always did Bible as another 1-2 credits. So I took basically 3 courses a semester. And I did that for 8 semesters. So you do the math. Somehow, and you get credit for shir, and somehow then I 32 credits. I got more college credits the year I learned in Eretz Yisrael than any year I actually was in America. Because there I got a lot of credits, 32 credits. In America, I never got 32 a year. I got 25 for 6 years. I did 4 full years of college that way. Why? Rabbi Bronsky Lashlita told me, he says, you have to learn, you have to learn, you have to learn, you have to learn. You learn every year. So don't overburden it, take it slow. I started, I was young, I was 16, you know that. So I started young, so I was able to spread it out. And even so, there was all that time that was used in the secular studies, besides the work that had to be done for it. if one of my Rebbe had told me, I think I told you this story before. If I didn't, it's very important I tell you now before we finish today, that when I was in 11th grade and applying for early admissions to YU, so my father brought me to Rav Aaron Soloveitchik to ask a shiloh if I should do it. My whole shiloh time was a matter of bittul Torah. In the yeshiva I was in, I don't know if I would have gone to college, I would have learned the whole day. Or I would have taken night courses, I think it was night courses twice a week, something like that. And if I came to YU, so it'd be the afternoon, and maybe more courses, officially it was full time. So Rav Aaron sat with me for a long time and he made a whole calculation, and the calculation came out that if I came to YU as opposed to staying where I was, I would learn 1 hour a week less because of the college courses. So that's when Rav Aaron told me, he said, so that's it, you can't sleep on Shabbos anymore. You have to make up that hour. And since then, with rare exception, if I'm not feeling like I can count on one hand, I don't sleep on Shabbos afternoon. Now, it could be that's my nature. Perhaps I wouldn't have done it anyway. It wasn't the biggest nisayon for me. But that's when I heard it from my Rebbe. He said, you have to spend that time. So you have to make up the time. It might be important to take the college classes, but you have to make up the time for learning. And he was a tremendous masmid when he was in college, in Yeshiva College. So it was a big lesson. And then the second thing he told me was, and remember my father's reaction was hilarious. Rav Aaron said, you have to learn Musar. Because the person once came to Rav Yisrael Salanter, they only have a half hour, so what should I learn? You should learn Musar. Well, what about Gemara? What about Halacha? If you learn a half hour of Musar, you'll find more time to learn. You'll learn Gemara and Halacha too. That's what Rav Aaron said. He said, yeah. But then my father asked him, but it's well known, that Rav Yisrael Petterberger went to Volozhin to ask Rav Chaim Volozhin, who was the assistant Rosh Yeshiva, the Nitziv was Rosh Yeshiva, asked Rav Chaim Volozhin if he should institute a Musar Seder. In Volozhin, Rav Chaim said, no, Musar is like castor oil. Castor oil was what they called a cure-all. It could fix anything. You have a cold, you have pneumonia, you have coronavirus, castor oil fixes everything. Well, maybe Trump should mention that. Whatever. He's mentioning everything else. Soon he's going to have my Bubby's chicken soup, you know? That's the cure to coronavirus. Okay, listen, leave it to him. I like it when he does that. I think he's just trying to be positive. The people who hate him, they want to say that he's an idiot, he's a fool. Listen, he's a regular guy, just likes to schmooze. That's it. Happens to be he's the president of the United States. Maybe he shouldn't, maybe he can't. All right, this is because that's the Chakim who can clear the Democrats and Republicans, CNN and Fox News, really, but okay, whatever. So Chaim said, seriously, Musar just makes people learning in yeshiva sick. People who are sick, like the Balabatim, they have to have Musar, they have Bate Musar, Mishol Slatza, because they have Yitzharas, they're out in the world. They need Musar. But the people who are learning all day, they don't need Musar. It'll just make them sick, make them crazy. So obviously the Musar people disagreed, but Rav Aaron said that was in the 1900s, early 1900s, late 1800s. Now, especially boys exposed to the world, going to college, everyone needs Musar. Everyone needs Musar. So I didn't change my license plate mostly right then. At that time, I didn't have a license. I definitely didn't have a license plate. But eventually, that sank in. Very, very important that most of it should be learned every day. So that's what Rav Aaron told me, to avoid the bittul Torah. Anyway, the point that I'm saying here is, with all that being done in graduate school and college, so at 24, 25, I was very scared. Was I yotze in lil mode enough to now be lalamed? And I knew I wasn't married yet. I had a plan that I thought if I could learn now, full time, till I was 30, but maybe I could learn enough to make up for it. But then the yeshiva asked me to start saying a shir. So I asked the shaila, and I was told to take the shir, and here I am. So I hope that the people, I mean, I definitely discussed this with Rav Schechter and Rav Willig, who were the people I asked about it, and they said, look, Wilma, keep learning. Take the job and keep learning. So there has to be a Wilma, there has to be a Lame. It could be I was ready at that time. It could be for the highest year. So I can tell you I felt very inadequate. I used to say to some of the other Rabbeim, I don't feel ready. And some of them would say, you're crazy, you know, so much for these guys. Okay, but it did give me a few more years until I started teaching in Aleph Shir. So I could learn a little bit more. In fact, until I was 30, the way it worked out. So I turned 30. The beginning of the year, I started teaching in Aleph Shir. So it kind of worked out. So we're talking about Lot. And Lot was an individual who was a Talmud of Avraham Avinu, but he went out to be Marbit Torah before he had it fully. I mean, you just have to realize, I mean, where did he start in his mission of Avraham Avinu's yeshiva? In Sodom. That was pretty fertile land. I mean, that is what the Sukkim say. It was quite fertile. We'll get back to Lot. I think we're out of time. We'll get back to Lot and how the Midah of Malchus, the Midah of Mesiris Nefesh, became embedded in Moav, and therefore Elimelech knew to go looking for it in Moav. That was where the Midah of Malchus, the Midah of Mesiris Nefesh, was implanted, and he would have to look for it. To be continued. Rich Hashem, looks like tomorrow, after the Yom HaZikaron program, we have our regular levitity class. So we'll be able to continue tomorrow, Bez Hashem. Okay, we're both have a great day. We do a first period.